Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, you're also my partners in live show radio. Live show in Indianapolis coming up in about a month, boys. We're going to be trekking up to Indianapolis, getting together at Soma Church and Day Spa to do a series of live episodes. And Piper, I understand we have a VIP ticket available for that. And there's a little bit of a deadline on it. Talk to me about that.
There is, in fact, a little bit of a deadline on that. Yes. So the show is September 24th. That's a Sunday. The deadline for the VIP tickets, which is our top tier ticket, that's the one that comes with the custom T-shirt from our very own Josh Byers. That deadline is September 5th. So at the time of this release, that should be, assuming we get everything lined up, tomorrow. So Tuesday, September 5th is the deadline for the VIP tickets. Standard tickets will remain available up until the time of the show. Those don't come with the awesome T-shirt, though. So if you're planning to be there, you've been weighing it, you're not sure, we have gotten a sneak peek at the T-shirt concept.
Beauty.
Can confirm it is awesome. Josh has once again pulled magic out of his hat. And so yeah, September 5th, get your VIP tickets. And then if you're still waiting after that, tickets will still be available, just not the awesome ones with the custom T-shirt, et cetera.
Well, and I think it's important to mention, we always go really nice on the T-shirts. They're soft. They're the kind of T-shirts you want to actually wear. None of this, like, you know, paper consistency T-shirt that you get at like a 5K or like a school event or whatever. These are really, really nice. You want to work them right into your rotation, that kind of T-shirt. So it's going to be well worth the cost of that VIP ticket.
Boys, I like the way you phrase that, baby. Work it into your rotation.
Work it in. Yeah, just
work it into your fashion rotation.
That's right. Like that. Just put it in the starting lineup. You know, make it a starter from day one. You won't regret it. That's a good choice. Boys, we have other good choices to make because we have an exceptional topic today. Things that have gone away that we miss. That don't exist anymore. We're going to wax philosophical about that and other things right after this quick break. All right, boys, we're back. We paid some bills or something. Here's the conversation that I want to have today. I want us to talk about things that don't exist anymore, that we like. Things that we like that just don't exist anymore. I've got some ideas in some different categories. I'm sure you guys have ideas. Baby, this was your idea, topically. What were you thinking about when you proposed this?
Well, you know, so occasionally, and by occasionally, I mean almost never, but I think about, you know, the pod. I think about it coming to an end. And I think about, you know, I've heard from some people saying, man, it was a great run. The pod has meant so much to me. And they're already sort of waxing a little nostalgic about it, even though we're still, you know, in motion with it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of got me thinking about, you know, from my perspective, things that I've enjoyed that, you know, whatever, on any level, any item, any event, any, you know, any cultural thing that used to be there that is not there anymore. And again, it's like endless, right? Because like things move on and, you know, we move on from, you know, different events in life, different technologies change things. So we do things differently. And so there's probably bigger things in our lives that we look back on and go, man, I wish that was still there. I wish this band was still together. I wish these dudes were still doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Because it forms our memories. And so thinking about some people that are going to feel that way about this pod, which is probably hard to believe, but they are. Yeah, it just got me thinking, like, let's chat about that. Now, of course, I always kick myself in the foot because it's the worst place in the world for me to start remembering and thinking about things like that. So I'm going to need you guys to lead out on this.
Yeah, I have a couple. And I'll just start with these two and see if it takes us anywhere dialogue-wise. And I wasn't so much thinking like, you know, shows or bands or anything like that. But it's fine that you were thinking along those lines, and I'll want to hear stuff like that. But for me, I had two. I miss analog cars. Like cars, I miss buying a car that isn't just a computer with like four wheels and a seat. You know what I mean? I miss having
and all the mechanics we know said amen.
Well, yeah. And I miss, I guess, being able to open the hood and like recognize what's in there. You know what I mean?
Dave, do you work on your cars? Are you like a guy? Are you a mechanic?
No, I'm really not. But I like an old school carbureted kind of old school engine. I could look at it and sort of see what was going on. You know what I mean? I feel like the motors now, like even the engine compartments, you just look in there and it's like, you know,
you have no hope, man.
Yeah, this isn't for me. I have no hope. You know, this is beyond the pale. So I guess, and I miss like the gauges and like the dashboards of old cars where everything was just really kind of straightforward and you weren't like sort of operating an iPad on the dashboard. You were just kind of like pressing a button. I think that's a nice thing. And I've actually, this is a longer story that I will keep short, but I've had a guy offer me a 1975 Volvo Ambassador that needs some work, dude, but it is a beauty. It's a beaut. And I'm going to get it.
I'm going to look that up right now. I don't know what the Volvo and
Look it up, dude. It's real kind of in true Volvo fashion. It's sort of boxy, but in a nice way.
Probably weighs about 8,000 pounds. Totally steel frame, the safest car ever.
So this was a car that Volvo was trying to position as like, I don't know, if you were like the president of a country, you would like sort of drive it into town or whatever. You know what I mean?
It looks totally president of a country in 1975.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah. But compared to a now car, it would be, you know, barely, it offers basically nothing, but that's what I like.
Baby, is it the hatchback? They have a hatchback too. Which version?
It's not the hatch. The one that I'm getting isn't the hatch. It's more of a standard like sedan style. But
got it.
Super fired up about it. Super old timey and simple. And I miss that kind of car. I think the other thing that I miss is kind of pre-internet school. So like being a kid in school before the internet, and Pipe, you and I were talking off the air about the 94 emails that we get from teachers every week that I'm sure is just an exercise in like them, you know, covering their backside and not getting in trouble. So I get it. But yeah, my youngest has two more years of high school left and I'm really counting the days, until that's over. Cause it's super annoying.
How long until in your job you are required to send, you know, 7 emails a week to your students' parents?
I know,
at the college level.
Dude, I've been thinking about that. And for now, we're saving off like, or we're staving off sort of servicing the parents, but that's coming. I mean, especially with the demographic that we cater to, it won't be long before we're, you know, we're having Zooms with parents. And the thought of that makes me want to jump off a building, but you know, it's neither here nor there. Pipe, what are some things that you used to like that are gone now?
Man, the thing that came to mind was news stories. When news was new, like breaking news. I miss breaking news. Because, you know, for example, I think back to remembering where I was when I heard, the verdict of the OJ trial or that kind of thing. And nothing is breaking anymore. It just feels like the constant barrage is sort of breaking us. And so, or even in on a very small scale, like I remember in college sleeping in on Saturdays, waking up and going and tuning into like Sports Center or whatever the highlight show was to catch the previous day's sports scores and stuff like that. And
transactions.
The ticker at the bottom, you'd be like, whoa, somebody got traded. And like now it's just, you know, Sham Sharania in my pocket telling me that somebody has been traded 6 minutes before they've been traded. And I know before they know and that kind of thing. And so, I think I miss, which probably means just missing anticipation.
Yes.
You sort of, you live your life, with the general anticipation that something could happen, and I'll find out about it on the 6 o'clock news or SportsCenter tomorrow, or when they break into, you know, if it's big enough, they break into a show and be like, all right, we've got breaking news.
Yeah.
So, you know, pardon the interruption kind of thing. And that, I miss breaking news and all of the anticipation, because the other thing about that was that it was then shared news.
Right.
You know, everybody experienced, you know, if you were a fan of something, you all experienced it at the same time. And so then it becomes sort of a common conversation.
Yeah, that's a great one, Pipe. That's really huge. Like the idea of the shared experience, the monoculture, like getting stuff at the same time is completely gone. I see it manifest in my students, but that's just because I have this sample size that's in front of me every day. And you know, their generation lacks that. And I don't even know that they know enough about it to miss it per se, but it's definitely changed college. I had a news related one too. And then baby, we're going to assume that you thought of some. My news related one was, I missed the idea of going to get the papers. So like I was watching a
yes.
I was watching a movie last night where like there were some old people in it, and their son was like about our age, and they wanted to get him out of the house, and the mom like shoved a few dollars into his hand and was like, just go get the papers, you know? And I'm like, ah, like going somewhere to get the papers. That sounds delightful. You know, and you know, you go to some newsstand. There's no newsstands anymore. Like I missed you guys. I miss newsstands in cities. Remember this?
Dude.
Remember when you used to go to a city? You'd go to like Chicago or like, you know, Indianapolis or some city. Yeah, and you're walking around and there's like a newsstand, and you get
they
to
still
just
got them in the cities. You can still find them, man. Dude, they're still doing that.
Really? Yeah, that's good, dude.
Oh,
that's,
dude, yeah,
yeah. That's
hilarious. I was just in Chicago, and you'll like walk into like the old school like dude on the corner selling like 690 different magazines and newspapers, and you're like, oh man, I feel like I'm in heaven right now.
I know, you know? Dude, that's a nice time. And yeah, just,
but it's
just
rare. It's rare.
It's rare. And just the idea of like going to get the paper and having the paper matter, you know, and to your point, Pipe, you're discovering things and, you know, you're reading box scores, seeing transactions. That was just like a fun deal, especially if you were in a city that had a good paper. So like, you know, Chicago, the papers were massive back in the day, like the Trib and the Sun-Times, and it was just kind of awesome to experience that. What about for you, baby? You got a couple?
You know, it's really on the tip that you guys are on, which I think, and then I want to wax a little philosophical about that, which is like all of our tips here are on the kind of the no technology tip, getting a little more analog.
Yeah.
And I think about that. And then, you know, so let me qualify what will automatically like, you know, get tweeted at us after something like this, which is like, well, just, you know what I mean? Just throw away your cell phones and just back away from it. It's like, none of us have the ability to do that.
Right.
I mean, we can do it in certain ways, but like, you can't, we're not living in a world that.
All of us would have to throw away our cell phones to regain any of the things we're talking about. That's if I throw away my cell phone, that's fine. But also, I then have no connection to anything. I haven't regained anything at that point.
Well, that's my point, is that we all are living in a world and work jobs to where we literally can't do that, right?
Yeah,
so, like, we would deem ourselves, like, we would not be useful to the people that communicate with us a certain way. And, you know, we just can't, we don't have the luxury of that anymore, right? Because of given just who we are, what we do. So, one of the things that I always think about is, just this idea, like when I think about like life as like a person in his early 20s or late teens, I think about like all like the in-between times when you're with people and then you're not with people. Mm. And there were all of these beautiful like natural breaks where it's like, dude, I can't even contact you. Like, we're going to make a plan to see each other or to hang out, or I will see you there later. But there's no contact like in between any of that. And I'm fascinated because like what I'm always trying to do is remember what that was like. And I literally can't remember. Like, I can't remember what it was like when I was like dating Melissa, there were no cell phones. I was dropping her off at her house at the end of the day. And the only thing we could do is well, I'll call you tomorrow at some point.
Yes.
But there was 24 hours went by where there was, you know, there was zero contact.
Well, but that's really important though, baby. And it speaks to Pipe's great point about the anticipation was part of the fun of that. You know what I mean? So like, so you would get home and this is really good. You would get home from that date and you'd spend some time like reflecting on how great it was.
Yes.
And then you would spend some time like looking forward to tomorrow's call. And that was a part of the fun of dating. But now I can only imagine, I mean, it's been 27 years since I've dated anybody, but I can only imagine like, you know, you have the option to, I don't know, like Snapchat her immediately after the date, right? So you've lost.
Oh, dude, on your way home.
On your way home.
You're already saying, yo, what up? You know, it's like.
Right.
Yeah. So it has been like just that is lost forever. And yes. That is just the reality of it. I think the other thing is more tangible for me.
Yeah.
The other thing is these still exist. Mm-hmm. Record stores still exist.
Yeah.
But for me, being a child of the 80s, mm-hmm. you know, so it was a mix between, you know, you have your hipster downtown mm-hmm. record stores. Mm-hmm. But then you also had like the big like box chain record stores.
Yeah, right.
And what those were good for was when a band was dropping a new album, you know, that would be you'd be standing there, you'd be waiting for the store to open mm-hmm. and you could grab the cassette, the disc, yep. you know, whatever the format was. And dude, that would always happen, I think, on a Tuesday. And I miss that so much because that was just so much fun. Because
yes.
I like product. I like things.
Yes.
So, you know, an album comes out and here it is. It's popping up on your Amazon Prime. It's like, it's fine. You know, I mean, you still get to hear it no matter what. But there was something about the process, driving
yes.
to the store, waiting, buying it, maybe buying a couple different formats of it. And it just increased back to your word, Big T, is like it increased the anticipation of it.
Right.
Because you were like, you were investing, man. You were spending money.
Yes.
And I liked it. Yeah. I liked spending money on that stuff.
You were investing. You were, this is magical. You were taking a little bit of a gamble, you know, like I heard one of the tracks on the radio, but
you heard the one single, but you had no idea what the rest of the album was going to sound like. It was going to deliver the goods or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I going to like the other nine tracks, you know, and to Pipe's point about, you know, the monoculture, you know, you're waiting in line with other people and
totally.
You get the tape. Everybody's like pulling the plastic off kind of at the same time. And you're exploring the liner notes and, you know, I remember very clearly, like it was like a 25, 30 minute drive from like my house to the nearest mall. Mm-hmm. And I remember like that 30 minute drive, driving home with a buddy, like exploring that album and deciding if we liked it or not, you know, and like kind of talking about it and kind of being like, well, I like this track, but not this one. And man, was that fun, you know?
Yeah.
And while you're waiting for it, you're like looking forward to how fun it's going
to
be.
And you can apply that to you can apply that to 100 different things, you know,
sure.
like people that, I mean, I talked to somebody recently that was like, I mean, man, I just loved going to like Family Video and getting the VHS, you know, the new movie that finally dropped. And so it applies in all these different ways too.
Yeah. Again, though, you're talking about to some degree the joy of being with people, but also the joy of product, you know? And when you went to Family Video, it smelled like Family Video. I mean, it smelled like this combination of like videotape, plastic, candy, popcorn, like there was a sensory
vague employee BO.
Yeah, right. But there was a sensory element to it where
it was movie theater light.
You were experiencing a thing, you know, and then you gave somebody some money and you left with a thing, you know, there was something in your hand and you're going to drive home. You're going to throw it into the VHS and like it or not.
Yeah. It's the philosophy behind product, you know, and it's like, it's something that I think the newer generation is starting to catch, you know, in terms of like, that's why vinyls made such a huge comeback. I'm just mm-hmm. talking about music, obviously, mm-hmm. but like people like to buy things because it puts a particular kind of worth on things. If it's turned into a product, you know? And so again, we're all old enough to have come from an analog era.
Yes.
And again, whatever you want to apply to, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? But it's just the fun of like getting a thing that you enjoy and that you have to wait for and anticipate and then get to share with other people. who, you know, who also are into the same thing that you are. Man, it's just, it is a particular kind of magic that I think
it is.
Has been largely lost. You know, it might be lost for us anyway when you get to a certain age. I mean, obviously, it's just different, right?
It's but different.
I think, you know, so I'm glad we got to experience it in the era that we did, too.
I think, the magic gets lost, but not the comfort. Like, think about the old guy who has the rhythm of, like, coffee and newspaper.
Oh.
You know, the newspaper gets thrown up on his porch and he gets to go yell at the kid who threw it in the bushes. And like, there's just like, there's a whole rhythm of old people-ness that we will not get to experience because we pick up our phones from our nightstand and scroll the news and our, you know, and have that's lame. Whereas like coffee, kitchen table, newspaper, head out the door for work. I mean, we don't even have to head out the door for work sometimes. Like, I'm going to work from home today.
Yeah.
So there's and again, I am not profoundly nostalgic in the sense of the history was always better, but I definitively think things have been lost because every single thing that you guys are talking about, the best aspect of it was what it led to with other people. Mm-hmm. You know, the family video thing, like, you were an utter weirdo if you went to family video, rented movies, went home and watched them by yourself repeatedly, you know, whereas like you go with friends and you stroll around and you spend 15 minutes arguing over whether we get this movie or that movie. Yeah. And then you go back and watch it at someone's house or the album release. Like, we used to listen to music with people, like an album would drop and say, hey, have you heard the new, like, I remember when, Dr. Dre's 2001 dropped. Mm. Sitting and listening to the whole thing with friends, and when was the last time any of us sat down with friends and listened to an album for whatever that is, like 42 minutes or 38 minutes or it is?
The youth might have brought that back in some pockets. I don't know, to be honest. It's possible.
Is, like, album releases, unless your name is Taylor Swift, don't matter.
Yeah.
Music release does, song release does, you know, but like, it's just sort of a constant drip rather than like desert oasis, which is what it felt like when stuff dropped, which was, we haven't had anything new for 3 years from, I mean, Dr. Dre's case, it was like, whatever, 11 years and then, you know, nothing since. And so there's this, there's anticipation.
Yeah, it was like The Chronic and then that one, right?
Yeah. That's it. And then there's, you know, rumors since, which I don't think he's ever going to release anything. But so that, but the people aspect of it is what made all of those experiences so pronounced, with the exception of maybe like the newspaper. But but that still feeds into the anticipation and the shared news story. And like, you know, you get to the office and you're like, hey, did you read the article by whatever your favorite local columnist is? Because one of the ones that came to mind when you were talking about newspapers was, have we lost local legends?
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Oh,
you know, so I'm thinking, you know, you mentioned like Chicago papers and stuff like that. So local news columnists. Yep. So the guy who can walk into like whatever janky bar in town and everybody knows, oh, that's news opinion columnist, you know, Steve.
Yeah.
Or the local like quirky guy who's always writing letters to the editor or at the Metrodome. Where you know, a few blocks from where I grew up, where the Twins and the Vikings played, there was a guy named Wally the Beer Man. He was a beer salesman, you know, like the guys who go up and down the aisles, and had this big, like, stentorian booming voice, and he would hand out baseball cards of himself to kids,
incredible.
Like Wally the Beer Man cards. I think I probably still have one somewhere.
Oh, that's interesting.
And and so, like, have we lost local legends?
I kind of think we have.
We now have viral video legends. By legend, I mean they last 8 minutes and then we forget they existed.
Well, yeah, but legend doesn't have anything to do with geography anymore, to your point.
Yeah. I think the energy is kind of similar, though. Like, what Wally the Beer Man wanted was for people to acknowledge him. You know what I mean? Like, in a sense, he wanted to belong. He wanted, you know, some bit of permanence beyond just, I sell beer at the Metrodome. You know what I mean? It was like, so like getting a baseball card of yourself printed was this ultimate kind of analog exercise in trying to get a bit of permanence. You know what I mean? Like, Wally the Beer Man wasn't putting out a record or like publishing books, but it's like, hey, here's this baseball card. This is proof that like I existed. You're going to find this in your junk drawer in 20 years next to the the program with the picture of like Jake Reed on the cover, you know, and it's going to be, it's going to remind you of me. And I actually think that's kind of great. Boys, let's take a break. This is a great topic. And on the other side of it, I want to ask you some questions about this energy, but on the production side. We'll be back in 2 and 2. All right, boys, we're back. So this energy of real things, this kind of philosophy of product, as you put it, baby, we've been talking about it kind of on the consumer side. And we've been talking about how, you know, for a lot of us, getting these products, it reminds us of sensory memories, whether it's coffee, newspaper, cigarette with grandpa in the morning, like very sensory, you can smell it, you know, or like standing in line to buy a new tape or whatever. I'm curious about this from the production side. So you make music, baby. We all do books. And I think we all sort of have gotten joy in the past from buying books and browsing bookstores and acquiring books and having libraries in our houses and that whole thing. Has the internet age changed some of the joy for you guys on the production side? So like writing an article that used to run in a magazine, but now it runs on some website, you know, which is an experience that I've been having lately. It is less cool to me. I would rather be able to still walk down the street in a city and like happen upon a newsstand and be able to point out to my wife, like, oh, I have an article in there this week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's way cooler than saying, hey, navigate to worldmediagroup.org and you can see my 800 word piece on, I don't know, whatever. So how has that changed things for you? And I should ask somebody specific. Yeah. You can go first, baby. Yeah.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, obviously growing, the thing is like, I think the era that I grew up in, it was the product that sort of like legitimized what it is that you were, you know, mm-hmm. doing. And mm-hmm. it was kind of a sign that you had, you know, you had like accomplished something or you mm-hmm. had, you know, so the whole idea about, getting a record deal, for example, was that mm-hmm. at some point you would have a cassette, a CD, and a vinyl out that would showcase the record you made, right? So that's it wasn't right. So everything kind of, so and then, you know, writing a book, it's like, well, man, I can write 27 books, you know, and just have them be stacks of paper sitting around my house, or a publisher can give me a deal, and then I have this book that's available for sale to be bought, to be enjoyed. It's like there's something tangible and real about it. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think there's just not with the advance of everything going online, and I think kind of the explosion of media in general. So in the past, there was only a few record companies, and there was only mm-hmm. a few media outlets. There was far less opportunities to get published or to get your material out there. So it was a big deal if you could get your material out there, right? Like, like the biggest thing was like somebody gave me a break. And I feel like there are so many outlets and opportunities to be published and to get your material out there. And not even that, but you can kind of do it yourself, you know, whether, hey, mm-hmm. look, I got a YouTube channel now, or I have this, or I have that. And what I've noticed about the younger generation is that they don't have a category for what I just talked about. They're not thinking, well, did that come out independently? Was that self-published, or did it come out on an actual record label, or, you know, even using words like actual, right? Or did that come out on a real book publisher? It's like, they don't even know what that means. That like, that doesn't mean anything to them. Right.
Dude,
because that's not the way that they receive media and product. Wow. And so I think for us from an older generation, we just go, well, it's lost its sense of exclusivity and specialness, for lack of a better word.
No, 100%.
And so it just feels less special. Like if somebody for example, we all write articles for online, you know, media mm-hmm. outlets. But in the last couple of years, I did a couple of articles that came out in the print edition of like Christianity Today. And mm-hmm. dude, I mean, I don't know. It just was more fun because they sent me a bunch of copies in the mail and they mm-hmm. said, hey, your article is on page, you know, 32. And it was just, it felt old school to me. It was like fun to be able to open the mag and mm-hmm. just see it there in print. It was just mm-hmm. more fun.
It is more fun. Yeah. Pipe, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Ronnie's saying in terms of the sort of the that idea of like real versus not real that we have in our mind, like real publisher, real record label, kind of doesn't exist anymore. Except it does in other areas, which is interesting because you know you think about like my kids, they don't record labels, publishers don't mean anything to them. However, name brands do. Like clothing name brands, shoe name brands, technology name brands. You know, like they're not going to buy a knockoff set of headphones. They want Beats or whatever. Like so those things do matter, not just in this realm. And I think you know intellectual property is different than hard goods in that way. But I think that could come back around to some degree. Just because at some point the pendulum swings to like, you've got to have some standard for what to trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the same way that, you know, when I was 20 and broke, I did buy cheap clothes because it's what I could afford. And then once I made a little bit more money, I was like, you know what? It's probably worth it to spend more money on jeans and shoes because they last eight times. I'll spend three times as much money and they'll last eight times as long and they're more comfortable. Yeah. So I think that'll come back around to a degree. The thing that came to mind when we were talking about sort of the how things have changed and what does it feel like?
Yeah.
What stands out to me in the book world is the lifespan of a book. When the you know the primary selling channel was retail, you know, physical retail stores, and new books came out. Two things were true. One, there was a much more limited supply of books because you couldn't put a million books into the world when there was only space for 100,000. And in order to sell them, they needed to have a decent run on the shelf. You know, they wouldn't give them a 48-hour turnaround on those shelves. They'd get a month, you know, or two plus weeks on that front-facing, front-of-store kind of placement. And the publishers were working on that all the time. And if you could get a book onto like Barnes and Noble's face out end cap for religion new releases, it was going to move.
So
at this point, though, like I wrote a book that came out in January that I periodically forget exists.
Yeah.
And we're 9 months later, not even 8 months later.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that lifespan of books, the constant churn of newness is maybe cumulatively good in the sense of there's a lot of stuff being published that wouldn't have otherwise been published. Yeah. But that could also be said on the bad side. There's a lot of stuff being published that wouldn't have otherwise been published.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I feel the tension is like, if you put a book into the world, you should anticipate that nobody will care in 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which sucks. Like that is a crappy reality because of how much work goes into books.
I mean, probably more realistically, nobody will care in 2 minutes. Like you'll put a book into the world, they'll see your tweet about it, they'll regard it, and then they'll move on, you know, and they might buy the book. Like you really have like 2 minutes to get them to care about it enough to like drop it into an Amazon wish list or like pull the trigger right then and there or whatever. It's really strange. I have something related to this that I want to talk about on the other side of our last break, which I'm taking right now. All right, boys, we're back. As you were talking, Pipe, about the book business, it reminded me of another thing that's kind of gone. It's not really gone, but it's gone in terms of like being a thing that people care about. And it's definitely gone in terms of being a way to promote a book. I miss radio. I miss people listening to the radio. So like it used to be, I don't know, if you had a 15-minute commute or whatever, you would flip on the radio. You would hope that you weren't in an ad break. You would hope that there was a song on that you like or some kind of like talk show that you cared about. And then in the book promoting cycle, it used to be you would have a book drop and then you would book like your publicist would book a bunch of radio appearances for you, where the station would call you and you would, you know, they would ask you questions for like 20 or 30 minutes about your book. And then people would be like, hey, I caught you on the radio, you know, and they were impressed. You know what I mean? So like radio, for whatever reason, was this big like status conferral engine where if somebody heard you on the radio, it was a really big deal. And it kind of went into this feeling of, oh my gosh, you have a book out, you know, and having a book out was a cool thing back then. It was like, ah, oh, you got a book out, you're doing some radio appearances, you know, people are kind of being impressed by that, they're caring about it. But yeah, now it's like a book comes out, you tweet out a picture of the cover, and people don't care in 2 minutes. I miss that. I miss radio.
What? Okay, quick question. Yeah, quick, yeah. Quick sort of derailment regarding radio.
Yeah.
What? I think we've talked about this on the show before, but since we've been doing this forever, I forget.
Yeah.
What are your sort of favorite versions of radio interview? And by favorite, I can mean like tongue in cheek favorite, or like, oh, this is actually the best. Mm. So, for example, my favorite is the like Christian morning show host who's has probably never read a book.
Yeah.
And yeah. has been handed the fact sheet.
Yeah.
By his producer 8 minutes before he went on air, maybe 100%. While he's on air.
Yeah.
And he's like, next up with us is Barnabas Piper, author of, usually gets the subtitle wrong.
Uh-huh.
And then his first question is something like, Barnabas, you wrote a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a question in there?
Yep.
So that what are y'all's favorite versions of radio interaction, of the makes you chuckle variety, or like, man, I really appreciate it when they actually do this variety?
Yeah, I would say the one that you just described is sort of standard. You know, that's the standard, and you feel for this person, right? They, I don't know, they graduated from Indiana Wesleyan in 1986 with a mass comm degree or whatever. And it's like, they dreamed of being on the radio, and the best they could do was like, I don't know, WBCL in Fort Wayne or whatever. And, you know, in your job, if you're a Christian talk radio host, is to interview other Christians about their mostly crappy books, you know, like this is your lot in life. And, so yeah, there's definitely some compassion there, but I would say that's standard. Every once in a while, and this was a cool one to me, and tell me if you've had this experience, you would get the person for whom all of that was true, i.e. they don't read, they're not interested in your book, but they would kind of acknowledge it, and they'd find some aspect of you that they thought was interesting and just talk about that. So like, I have no interest in your book on the emergent church, but I see here that you wrote a book about Mike Tyson 6 years ago. Let's talk about that one, you know? And I'm like, great. I love talking about boxing, you know? And it turned from something transactional to something human. And that was always like my favorite type of thing, you know?
Well, yeah, and for an interviewer, they have to be interested or the whole thing is lame anyway. So if they find anything that they're actually curious about, this is gonna be better for listeners. Whereas mm-hmm. if they're like, ah, oh, you wrote a book about complaining, Ronnie, tell us about that. Like, mm-hmm. whereas if they're like, I see you used to be Christian music and I used to work with this record label, tell, you know, has nothing to do with the book, but also they're interested. So it's more lively at least.
You can always detect that too. It's so funny because, like, you know, not even I just assume the people are just getting sort of the one sheet that sort of describes the book and they haven't read it. So I don't struggle with that. I just assume that. Mm-hmm. But I'm always amazed at how like some of these hosts should be so much better at faking it than they are. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, you do this like three times a day. Like, of course you haven't read the book. You've never read a book. But like, to Pipe's point, there's a way to like present this thing with a level, like enthusiasm can cover a multitude of sins, right? And it's like, dude, you got to act like you're a little more interested than this. It doesn't matter that if you are or not, you haven't, like, that has nothing to do with anything. You know, I mean, I'm not interested in the chicken soup I'm going to have for lunch, you know, this afternoon, but I'm still going to eat it, right? And, you know, and I'm not going to take like 7 hours to eat it. You know, so it's like, dude, just like come to the table a little bit with it. Because I'll tell you what, so I used to drive a lot in Southern California, and mm-hmm. SoCal is because it's commuter culture, there are tons of like radio talk shows on all these different stations because they cater to that, you know, that culture. And so you could always find, I mean, there's just 1,000 of them, right? You could find them. And one of the things is that, you know, one of the differences between that and maybe just like Christian radio in general or some of these other things that we're talking about is, is there is a level of, and maybe it's because they're allowed to have a little more freedom and allowed to be a little more off the cuff. So they can be intuitive. They can be funny. They can be a little irreverent. But the one thing that they have, the one thing they all have is energy. And I always feel like that's kind of the thing that might be missing. Like, dude, if you have energy, you can make anything kind of fly in some ways. I know there's, I'm not, don't go too far with that, but you know what I mean? Like, and that's, that's something that I think that's the component on radio. Even
and
for
the 90s
even
church
for
growth
our,
movement said, amen.
And so here we are on our radio show. And it's like, you know, I mean, not every one of these episodes, we've probably had one or two episodes that haven't been great, you know, in the last 10 years. But like, dude, we can look at the things that we're having energy talking about right now. And I don't know if this is going to be interesting to anybody, but we have energy talking about it. And it makes it compelling. Like, energy brings light, you know, brings life.
Yeah,
and,
but
so I'm always just shocked about that. But
no, that's good. But I would add to that, in the case of this show this morning, there's a genuineness about our energy. Whereas I think on a lot of Christian radio and like 90s Christian radio, it was like, you know, hi, my name's Sarah Grace Jenny Dean, and I'm here to talk about, you know, and it's just like, it sounds like the lady did like a mountain of cocaine off her desk before she got on the air, you know, and it's like, I know you're not that enthusiastic about this, you know, like, you can't be, you know, it would be impossible.
I think all three of us have been around Christian radio stations a few times, and you know for a fact that's not real. Like, that on-air light goes off, and they're like, all right, guys, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going home. Whatever. There's often a general sense of, like, thank God that's over.
Yeah.
And, it's the other piece of that resonating with what Ronnie said is that Christian radio particularly has leaned heavy into syrupy sincerity. Rather than energy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't be off the cuff. You can't be funny. You have to be heartfelt. Tell us about your book.
That's so true. Yeah, energy. Hey, energy is...
Nobody talks like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, energy, a better word... I think you kind of hit it, T. It's like energy... A better word for energy is authenticity. Just sort of like, hey, I care about what I'm saying right now. I'm super interested in what I'm saying right now, even if I'm not really saying anything right now. You know, but like, I'm into what I'm doing. And I'm not, and again, part of Christian radio is that there's like a level of like carefulness that they have to bring to the table. And you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's, you're just not going to find that same level of caution, you know, for people that don't have to watch their every word.
But so like, exactly. Aspirationally and hypothetically, I don't know, if I appeared on some radio show and the dude was like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't care about your book. And moreover,
it'd be the greatest interview of all time.
It would be great. And moreover, I hate this job. I can't believe, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this. I really don't want to be here. That would be like the most exceptional conversation of all time. I would immediately like love and respect.
Oh, I'm here for that. I'm totally here for that. Yeah.
I'm so, man, here for it.
That sounds like the premise of like a 1993 Bill Murray movie or something.
Like
the radio show host who's just decided to be honest.
Yeah. In the third act, you find out he's actually been dead for 4 years. You know, that would be another 90s thing. But I would watch that movie, you know.
Absolutely. And resonate with it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Is that what we're trying to say right now? Are we using code, fellas?
we've been dead for 4 years.
Yeah, we've actually been dead for 4 years. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie that we're living
in. I've hated this podcast for, wait, how many years have I been on it? 9 years, guys. I've hated it for 9 years.
That's right. You've just stayed in it for the money. You know,
I stayed in it for the money. I got bills to pay. I have fans to please. Oh, and that's how my life works, boys.
I know.
That's how my life works.
That's how all of our lives work for another month, you know? And then we're going to
have to... How can we endure through this month, boys, of 4 more weeks of podcasting? How can we endure?
Afterward, we're going to have to reimagine who we are, you know? We're going to have to do total persona reboots. That'll be fun.
I mean, what does September 25th look like for you?
Who am I even on September 25th?
I don't know who you are. That's what I'm asking right now.
Yeah, I'm a leadership guy, I think.
Empty shell of a man for a day, and then you're a leadership consultant.
Yeah, where I'll be an empty shell of a man, just in a different way. Yeah.
May 25th, we all have leadership podcasts launching.
There you go.
Well, that's right. Ronnie, I would encourage you to go into more of like the Zen poetic route for at least a little while. Yeah, 100%. I think you would really crush it in that arena.
That
I think
goes,
Ted and I are stuck with leadership because that's all we can do.
Because, you know, Zen poetry stuff goes, it just gets really big in the CBA, man. It's always been just a huge market.
Just a huge seller. Yeah, you know, move a ton of product doing that. Everybody loves it.
Yeah, I mean, shoot.
Oh my gosh. What have we even been doing for the last 10 years?
Shucks.
Yeah. Shucks. This old thing. This old book of Zen poetry, you know.
Nobody's ever been able to say, man, happened was 10 years ago, I released this book of Christian Zen poetry and it just went global.
Said
no one ever.
Yes, exactly. It just went global. This book of poetry that like says absolutely nothing and will offend no one, but also inspire no one. It just sold like hotcakes, you know?
You're like an ex-book guy. What, all joking aside right now.
Yeah.
What is who is responsible for like the largest selling, like sort of poetic ish? But it would it be like Anne Voskamp? Is she kind of the reigning?
Oh, in
queen
the Christian
of putting
space,
out
I have
something
no idea. Yeah, no.
In
idea.
The Christian space, like, would that be considered like maybe? I know we're crossing lines here, and some people, oh, that's not poetry at all. But you know what I mean by that. But the most flowery, like arty thing. Did she kind of do it with that one book she released?
Was that Thousand Gifts? Was that
yeah,
her?
Yeah.
I think that probably now again it's not like proper poetry, you know, that's studied in literature classes, but it is
but
very much in that
there.
Sort of
it's out there.
Yeah, that reflective poetic language. The Every Moment Holy books.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Granted, those lean a lot more sort of liturgical, but those have been huge too, and they're actually really good as opposed to some of the like because it's not somebody dabbling, it is somebody sort of reimagining liturgy in a lot of ways and so but it has a very psalmic feel to it, but those have been that's probably the biggest one in terms of more like proper poetry.
Dude, I've got one.
Go ahead, T, and then I want to clue you guys in onto something, so go ahead.
Yeah, I think I've got one that I don't know if it counts, but I actually love it. Because I was about to do something where I just roast the whole idea of this, and if it was the last type of book on earth, I wouldn't get it. But then I was like, wait a minute, I'm a huge Valley of Vision guy.
Oh yeah,
I love Valley of Vision. I read one almost every morning of my life, and I guess that counts as poetry. You know, it's a certain kind of like prayerful poetry.
It's also old school. It's considered a classic.
Yeah,
too,
it's very old school. Considered a classic. Been around forever. But what were you gonna say, baby?
Okay, so boys, I got a finishing book right now of poetic abstract prayers that's going to come out like late next year. And I mean, it's so I do abstract things. Like if you ever read my lyrics, it's always like abstract because I like abstract. So it's trying to keep it within the realm of being understandable, but it's some of it's way out there. And I mean, it's going to sell like 9.5 copies, but I'm just saying like, I'm doing this thing where I wouldn't say I'm fearful because it just is what it is, but I'm trying to find a category for something like what I'm doing that's ever gotten out there. Number one, Every Moment Holy is probably close pipe, but definitely more abstract than Every Moment Holy, right? Cause you can make sense of Every Moment Holy. This thing, you got to really think about some of these lines that I'm putting out there. And let me just say this, boys, I have no idea how it's going to fly.
I thought Rob Bell was pretty abstract.
Right.
Is this like Ronnie does Velvet Elvis?
Here's what Rob Bell did in a brilliant way.
Well, it's prayer. These are actual prayers. But,
it's actually about Jesus. Got it. Okay.
Rob Bell made like derpy, uncool Midwestern Christian people who are kind of ready to rebel and people who wanted to feel like they were deep people. He made them feel like they were. I mean, at the end of the day, that to me is the thing that Rob Bell did better than any other thing.
Well, I never read Velvet Elvis. Did you guys?
They were trash.
It wasn't my thing at the time. I mean, what is it? I don't even know what it is.
It's basically this stream of consciousness, like faux deep meditation on I don't know, some aspect of spirituality or whatever. And it's,
but it's
and
a it's, book, right? It's not like
yeah, it's
a
book. No, it's a book. Yeah, it's a book. Okay. It has chapters or whatever, I guess. But like, yeah, it was essentially an exercise in, if you were the consumer of that type of product, the reason you would buy it would be to feel like you're a certain kind of smart, deep person. And yeah, to feel like this energy, okay? Like, I'm a Christian, but not like that guy. I'm a yeah. Christian, but not like that lame khaki wearing guy who just like reads through the Bible in a year or whatever. Like, I'm the deep one. Like, I'm the interesting one. If your book of, you know, Yoda tweets can kind of capture that energy and make people feel that way about themselves, then I think you have a chance of selling it.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But what I love even more is Ted Kluck's review of Velvet Elvis. It has chapters, I guess.
Yeah.
It has some of the chapters were literally like one page and eight words. It'd be like chapter 27, are you sure? Chapter 28, picture of whatever. Like it was a...
Dude, I love it.
It really was a weird book in that way. It also... Rob Bell, in the realm of what Ted was saying, he I don't know if he created the paradigm, because I'm sure it's been around for forever. He marketed, successfully packaged the paradigm of sounding really deep by saying absolutely nothing. Basically, right, just posing questions. If you pose enough questions like, well, have you considered this? And right, never answering any of them,
yeah,
you sound brilliant.
Oh,
and
man.
So it had a lot of that. And like, well, what if Jesus was really this? And I'm like, that one was tried in Genesis 3. I'm not sure.
Dude, and that energy was like crack cocaine for a certain kind of uncool late 90s, early 2000s, like, well, I don't know, college ministry guy or whatever.
Anybody who had grown up in the Reformed world, which, I mean, dude came out of Grand Rapids. It's Dutch Reformed, like, cloistered up there. And, anybody who grown up and where there's like five tidy answers and a neat theological system for anything, he just he pumped energy into all the discomfort that young people had with this sort of suffocating theological system, as they felt. I mean, I felt the draw, and then I looked at what he was saying and I'm like, there's nothing here. He's not saying anything.
Did he?
But the draw away from that sort of like crushing, everything is rigid system was real.
Yeah.
Was he originally was he originally like a Reformed leaning guy, Bell? Was he?
I think so. Oh. I mean, he grew up in to Pipe's point, the breadbasket of it in West Michigan, where like, yeah, I mean, I don't remember the names of all the denominations, but you were probably going to some kind of church like that.
It's Christian Reformed Church, Reformed Church of America. I mean, it's Dutch Reformed everywhere. Just all different versions of Reformed.
And in his defense, that is a particularly off-putting and stifling culture. I mean, I've experienced just enough of it to know that, like, yeah, I mean, that's not a fun sort of place to grow up or live.
You're saying he would have had his own challenge, like he would have had his own respective challenges in that.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I think his brand of like, you know, I'm pacing around on stage in a, I don't know, like a Ween t-shirt, like pontificating about, you know, like whatever it is that I'm pontificating about. I mean, that would have been like crack for a certain kind of kid. And
it was right place, right time.
Right place, right time. 100%.
Cultural moment. 100%. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, totally. Boys, this was right place, right time for this episode. This is a good one. Yeah.
I did not anticipate ending up at Rob Bell.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, all roads lead to Rob Bell.
All roads lead to Rob Bell.
The podcast ends where it began.
Just like in Rob's theology, all roads lead to salvation, you know.
And until next time, love wins.
Love wins. What a great brand. That guy was a branding genius. He really did a nice job with it. But, hey, One last thing, I swear, and then I'm going to close the show. How long, and I'm kind of shocked that this hasn't happened. How long until Rob pivots into like leadership marketing books? Because being a marketing, not that I know of, but like being a marketing guy, is the only card left to play for him. Because he's kind of tried to be mystic guy. He tried to be like, I'm an interesting non-Christian with a talk show kind of guy that failed. Like, the only club left in the bag for him to play is leadership marketing guy, right? Or am I not seeing something?
Well, I don't know what he's doing now. Is he still on Oprah's network? Like, I haven't heard his name in so long. Like, I don't even know where the dude's at. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just basically being a non-Christian in Los Angeles. I don't know. Like, but I would have expected like a marketing book by now.
Yeah, kind of one of those things, right?
Yeah,
and that makes sense. I know it's odd that it hasn't. Maybe it's just been in the works.
Yeah, like I bet he's doing some real estate investing. I bet that book is coming. That book is absolutely coming. And I just want credit for having called it, you know?
That's well, if it comes out before the pod's over, then we'll be able to give you credit on the air, Big T.
I appreciate it, baby. Yeah, thanks for caring for me in that way.
I'm looking online, and the last update about him is from 2020 in terms of releases and different things. And so he seems to have just sort of faded into the background, which might mean he's scheming a great comeback as the marketing genius, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Believe marketing me, you.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's coming. Boys, the end of this podcast is coming. The end of this episode is coming. We have done what we always do on this program, except that we've done it better and longer. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This is my skyship, Dreamer. My cargo is stories, and our destination, dreams.
With Abide Sleep Stories for Kids, you can help your children fall asleep fast and learn about God. To find these kids' bedtime stories, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Stories for Kids. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.